All right. Welcome all. Max of the Accidental Engineer here. Today we're joined by Jeremy Karp. Jeremy will soon be joining Lyft as a data scientist, excuse me. Jeremy, do you mind introducing yourself a little bit and what your most recent background looks like?
Sure. So I'm Jeremy, most recent guest. So I just finished a PhD at Carnegie Mellon, where I was in the Algorithms, Combinatorics, and Optimization program. And there I worked in sort of interdisciplinary research, ranging from theoretical algorithms to applied optimization and machine learning and the connections between those fields.
So that was the last 5 years or so?
Yep. So I spent 5 years getting my PhD there. Yeah.
So I think you're a super awesome guest to have on for the reason that you're definitely an accidental engineer in the way that your undergraduate degree was not in computer science. Your first job out of college was not as a programmer or software engineer or data scientist, which might not have existed at the time, as a job title back in 2010-ish.
Yeah.
Do you mind sharing for our audience how you found your way into the PhD program, how you made the call that you wanted to go back into grad school?
Totally. So I majored in economics in college, and I graduated in 2010, and then I took a job as an economic consulting analyst at a company called Cornerstone Research. And so there I worked for 2 years before going back to get my PhD. And I guess I had some intention of getting a PhD starting in around junior year of college, but I had also been doing internships and setting myself up for getting a consulting job, and I wanted to take a break and try that out.
What was your undergraduate major again?
In economics. And I minored in math, so I was one class away from a math major, and that was kind of, as I started taking economics classes, I realized it was the more theoretical, mathematical modeling side of the field that I was interested in. And so I started taking math and CS classes too, and continued a little bit after graduation as well to prepare for grad school.
So I think we've had one or two PhD folks on the show so far, and all of them have mentioned a little bit about what their grad programs prepared for them for in the job market, whether they did internships throughout their grad program or not, and ultimately how their grad degree helped them in the job market. So my question to you is, did you do any internships through your PhD? At what point were you kind of more or less sure about whether you'd stick with academia or go into private industry?
Yeah, totally. So so my program is an interdisciplinary one, so it's joint with operations research, math, and computer science. And then in terms of research, we could pretty much, as long as we found an advisor who was supportive of that direction, we were able to do research in anything sort of in between any of those worlds. So it was, a lot of opportunity. You also have to know what you're doing somewhat to find the right project.
Is this something that's unique to Carnegie Mellon?
So it's so the same program more or less exists at Georgia Tech. I think someone who graduated from the CMU program became faculty there and thought it was a good idea and started that program. I think University of Waterloo also has a similar program. So I think it's definitely, a lot of people are aware that there are connections between these fields, and so there are a number of ways. I think Caltech has a program with a different name, but it's a similar program between applied math and computer science. So the idea is around, but at many universities you'd have to pick a department and be operations research or computer science or applied math, and then wait out on your own into other departments.
So your PhD advisor was okay with you not being necessarily committed to going into professorship after your PhD?
Yeah, I think any professor, their first choice for their students would be to become an academic, but my advisor in particular, he does a lot of applied work as well as very theoretical work, and he likes having a network of people in industry. So, I think I got some nudges at the end of, let's stay in touch. Maybe you can, share some data sets with my future students. And off to see how that works out with my future employers. But sure. I mean, I'm also, that's something I'll remain interested in as research and contributing back. So yeah, ultimately they're okay with it. Probably about between a third and half of students in my program end up going into industry, and then half to two thirds end up staying in academia is probably roughly how it shakes out.
And one of the things that is a common question that our audience of career-minded engineering folks are curious about is, never having held a job in a technical engineering programming coding role, how did you get your first technical job after joining the PhD program? I know you did some internships.
Yeah, that's right. So I think it was after my third year and fourth years, I interned at Amazon in Seattle. And I guess networking is always a good thing. So I wasn't even particularly ambitious about this, but an alum from my program who works at Amazon came back to give sort of half a technical talk, but also he was clearly there with the intention to recruit people. Mm-hmm. And I talked to him afterwards. And I guess my program is quite small, so a perk of that is when you meet someone who's an alum from your very specific program, there's instantly a strong connection there. The downside is your alumni network in aggregate is smaller than others, but you know, he clearly was interested in talking to me as opposed to people in other different programs, and so we sat down and chatted for 20 or 30 minutes, and then the next week I got an email from an Amazon HR person saying, you know, would you like to submit your resume? And at the time I was pretty, I was open to industry type work, but I think I was still leaning more towards academia. But I figured, you know, there's no harm in interviewing for this position. So I interviewed, I got the job. And then once I had it, it seemed like a good opportunity that I shouldn't turn down. And I had a really great first summer there, working in the supply chain research group at Amazon Seattle. And that both, you know, inspired me to come back the next summer and continue that work there, and also made me realize that there are great opportunities for people like me in industrial positions. And ultimately, I'm going to work at Lyft, but, you know, I saw that I think it's a similar sort of role at Lyft that I held at Amazon, and that experience both sort of filled in some gaps in terms of skills that I wouldn't have learned in the PhD program alone, and also got me more interested in those types of jobs.
So in contrast to some of your classmates in PhD programs at Carnegie Mellon and that you probably met elsewhere at other universities, did you feel like you were advantaged in your job search or qualifications for an internship and then a full-time role afterwards due to the fact that you had held a full-time job in between undergrad and starting your PhD?
I think people liked it mildly, but I mean, ultimately, so I think the school helps. Like, Carnegie Mellon just has a great reputation, and I was lucky to get to go there. Really, I felt the job market sort of comes to you when you're in a program like that. So, you know, I think ultimately employers do care that you aren't just someone with your head in the clouds, and so they want to see either... you know, maybe you worked on some more applied type projects throughout your research there, or you have, you know, a background as some sort of analyst or engineer, you know, other ways of demonstrating that. But probably I think 85-90% of it is that if you're in a strong grad program there, that takes a lot of the burden off of the person doing the job search. So I felt like really grateful to be in a really strong position there. And we can move on from there.
Okay. I realize that we can't really talk about some of the more specific things that you worked on in your internships and that you will be working on at Lyft. But for people who are currently in PhD programs, like the one that you were in, that are sort of operations researchy or computer science even, or machine learning, how much alignment was there between what you'd done in your first 3 years of your PhD before starting your first summer internship with Amazon and the work you were doing in that internship?
I mean, I think there was a lot of alignment in the sense that I don't think I would have been able to do that job successfully without having at least done the master's curriculum of coursework that I'd done. And I guess really probably the coursework more than my specific research was useful. I think machine learning is becoming useful in all areas. So even if the role is more traditional operations research, there are opportunities to incorporate machine learning into that. And so, I mean, my machine learning background before that internship was somewhat, I guess I'd taken the graduate machine learning class where you implement the basic algorithms and do a project and sort of learn an overview. And I'd done a couple personal projects that were related to applying machine learning to data sets I was interested in. And that was enough to get my foot in the door there. And I guess in Amazon specifically, they care a lot about optimization and use a lot of fancy optimization models. And that's something that I was really well positioned to do. So, I mean, for other people, you might have to beef up on linear programming, integer programming. But that's something that was very thoroughly covered in my PhD program. So that was a natural fit for what I wanted to be doing.
Like I said, probably can't talk about specifics of what you will be working on, but are there any problems in applied math or otherwise that you're particularly excited about working on over the next 10 years, you know?
Yeah, so I mean, kind of my thing, if I were to stay in academia and build a research program and also connected to what I saw at Amazon is that in operations research, typically you construct some sort of model. So for example, the famous problem is the diet model where you want to consume, you know, a certain number of calories and have that break down to, you know, fat, protein, and carbs that's balanced. And you also want to minimize your costs. So you have a portfolio of foods you can buy at the grocery store and you want to select the portfolio that meets your dietary restrictions and also is the cheapest. So this is kind of an abstracted model. And there are all kinds of models like that in operations research where if you know the full information, then you can enter it into a linear program or something like that and solve it exactly. But when you're dealing with, you know, a company like Amazon or Lyft or you know, Google or whatever, you know, oftentimes what you have is just, you know, virtually infinite amounts of data. And so the question becomes, how do you translate, how do you extract from data the exact coefficients that go into these models? And so what I'm interested in specifically is, are there end-to-end frameworks of taking data and converting that into discrete decisions that affect future decisions? So, you know, end-to-end models of discrete sequential decision-making. And this is something that I saw one of the projects I worked on at Amazon involved truck scheduling, and they were basing this off of heaps of data, but ultimately trying to solve an optimization model. And this is something that I think probably appears widely and was part of the research I did in my PhD, part of the work I did at Amazon. And I think it's still largely an unsolved problem. Every company probably has some approximate or heuristic way of dealing with it, but something more you know, fundamentally driven, but also works in practice would be the holy grail. And I guess for now I'll be approaching that from the more applied side of things. But I think it's an unsolved problem that greatly affects all kinds of businesses.
So I know I've thrown some shade at PhD programs in subtle ways in previous interviews that I've done, just from a career perspective and skills development perspective, and that I often tell people who are curious about, like, what programming language should you learn first? And my answer for those people is, get a job, find out what they're using, and learn it, because that'll be the best feedback mechanism above all else, potentially. However, having a recently furnished PhD in hand, I want to hear from you, and our audience probably also wants to hear, what were the pros and cons of doing a 5-year PhD program as opposed to trying to find a job in machine learning or data science or what have you straight after deciding that management consulting was not the ultimate path that you wanted to go down?
Sure. So I think for me, the PhD was very much a positive decision. But it's probably also not for everybody. You know, it's a very personal thing. And especially towards the very end, I realized how much of a, you know, strong, deep personal endeavor it was for me that I feel very happy to have been able to do, but not everyone feels the same way. You know, in terms of career progression and things like that, I mean, I wouldn't say I had this premeditated plan of I'm going to enter a PhD and then 5 years later I'll be a data scientist, which is a job that barely existed when I entered, at Lyft, which is a company that didn't exist when I entered. But I saw my options as I was working at this economic consulting firm. They're a very good firm, positive experience. If you're an undergrad in economics, I would still say that the Cornerstone Research is a great place to work. But you know, when I looked at my options, it was essentially try and continue to progress at the firm. It was go to business school. It was go get a PhD, go to law school, or try and laterally pivot and move into some sort of product role at some company or analyst role. And I've seen, you know, I think my assessment at the time was pretty accurate, as most of the people I joined, a few of them have become software engineers or are data scientists now through, you know, slowly moving through a sequence of two or three jobs that push them in that direction. A couple people are still with the firm and are you know, associates or higher up. There are people who have done MBAs and now are in the typical post-MBA type jobs, and there are some people in PhD programs. And I guess for me, when I saw my own skills, my own interest, I thought, you know, I had always been interested in academia and research you know, theoretical math and things like that. And so I said, you know, I'll probably always have some regrets if I never try and go down that path. And then I saw, when you look at the PhD programs I was interested in, the recent graduates, the ones who were in industry, they were doing things in tech and finance and government that that all sounded more exciting to me than the types of exits that I had, you know, from the other paths. So it just it made sense to me there. And you get, you know, at a good PhD program, you get, they pay for you to go there. So even if you dropped out with a master's degree, you get a free technical master's degree or a paid for one. And that seems like a good deal if that's the right degree for you. So and that was more or less my experience. So I feel very good about it.
There's a couple other upsides that I consider being really compelling things about choosing to do a PhD program, and that I think were tremendously beneficial for your career and for anyone doing a PhD. Is one, when you're holding down a full-time job or, God forbid, unemployed, you're operating under a lot of duress, so you aren't able to fully explore exactly the subjects and topics that you really want to explore. Even when you're doing it as a full-time employee somewhere, it's often hard to align that with your full-time job. Often when you want to change careers or change industries. The second thing that I want to plug about a huge pro to doing a PhD, and true of any grad program, is that, like you alluded to earlier, employers come to you when you have a natural ending to a graduate program. Universities and grad programs in particular are a watering hole for employers to go to, and they know that they will find people who are interested in, you know, entering industry. So, those are two other huge upsides that I should mention and sort of retract some of the shade I've thrown at PhD programs.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a long time to spend in school, and you have to. I mean, the other thing is I think people sometimes attribute, like, this person has a PhD from wherever, so they know, you know, everything about what X, but really what you know is, you know, anyone can learn anything. It's what you know is what you spent that time studying. And so PhD gives you great freedom to learn about pretty much anything that you want to, at least within the reins that your advisor gives you. And you know, both from courses and research, I learned a ton of things. And also, you know, I took some times where, you know, for 2 weeks, I'd spend, you know, 2/3 of my time reading about something that I thought was interesting. And maybe it was to apply it to research. Sometimes it was just because I was interested in that. And that's, and you're getting, you know, paid cost of living expenses while you're doing that. And so for me, that was a great opportunity. You know, I'm sure there are some whiz kids somewhere who know everything I know and, you know, didn't, you know, are dropping out of college to take my job. But for me personally, you know, I know a lot of skills and top area, you know, deep knowledge about topics that there's just no way I would have that knowledge if I didn't have the opportunity to do a PhD. And so, you know, that meant a lot to me, and I value it a lot.
So one of the particularly interesting things about your background in doing a PhD is being at Carnegie Mellon, being in Pittsburgh, ground zero for a lot of robotics research,
yeah.
Self-driving car research. In your tenure as a PhD student over there, Uber virtually bought the robotics department at Carnegie Mellon. Correct me if I'm wrong here.
That's kind of true. I think it was a little bit oversold in that. So there's a separate institute, NREC, that is affiliated with the university but is not on the campus. And I think a lot of the people Uber hired were research engineers, many of whom had PhDs or master's degrees who were working at this institute. That said, I think it certainly did disrupt a lot of projects going on at this institute. And they poached a couple of faculty members, and many, both master's students and I think some PhD students, dropped out to go work for Uber. So, you know, on the one hand, it probably makes it more attractive for grad students because it shows that, you know, if you go to Carnegie Mellon, especially if you do robotics, there's great opportunities. I'm not sure that the PI is running research labs were as thrilled about it. So it's kind of a mixed bag.
I mean, enthusiasm about this type of private industry involvement in academia is something I'm really unfamiliar with. Sounds like there's mixed feelings, yeah? If of your classmates in your PhD program who are sticking with academia, is the dominant form of funding for their research still coming from the U.S. federal government and in the form of grants? Or do academics in the area you were doing your PhD finding other funding sources for their research?
It's a mix. I think probably NSF grants is the most common. I mean, there's also military grants and things like that, Department of Defense grants. I know a lot of individual students who have like Google or Facebook fellowships, and maybe not a lot, but a few who got those fellowships. But I think NSF is the number one source. In terms of the faculty I worked with, my program does skew more theoretical, so I think that probably means that more of the funding comes from more fundamental research sources like the government. But big tech companies like Google, Microsoft, Facebook are all very serious about influencing the direction of academic research, mostly for better, but so that's definitely something that's in play for sure.
So most recently, you found this job with Lyft, and you went through the job search. Mm-hmm. In some ways, I'd imagine it would be pretty awesome being a grad student while doing that search, although I understand you were also finishing your dissertation and having to prepare to defend it.
Yep.
So that was probably stressful. But for our audience that's curious about job searching as a PhD student, What are the recommendations you have for them about what employers are the most earnest about hiring? What's the interview format and timeline look like for different employers, if you don't mind being specific?
Yeah, so I might not want to be specific about the employers because you sign a lot of NDAs with these things, and I don't know exactly what's covered, but
sure.
I was pretty focused on my interviews because I had a return offer to go to Amazon. So my thinking was only apply to places that at least would have a serious chance of being more compelling than that offer. And so, you know, if I was just applying broadly, I probably would have cast a wider net. But I got interviews through a mix of, I sent some cold applications. I also got some recruiters directly contacting me when they, you know, they're monitoring the top schools and they track, you know, they knew I'd been there for, you know, 4 years. And so people start reaching out. So I got a few interviews that way. And then also I talked to friends, you know, people from grad school, people I knew from all walks of life who are involved in engineering and technology, and got some referrals that way too. And so all of those were strong pathways for getting interviews. In terms of the structure and content, most places have a phone screen, and then nowadays it seems to be quite popular to send take-home challenges, which as a PhD student, I guess is a little less inconvenient probably than if you're a full-time person, because you know, I had the flexibility to you know, take a day off and spend it doing some take-home machine learning challenge. And I could see if you had a full-time job, it would be a little harder to find the time. And some of them were kind of interesting, but it does take up, you know, at least a day for each company you'd want to do that for. And then after you submit the take-home challenge, then I think after that usually came a flyout, and you would go to the, I'd go to the office and do a full day of interviews. Mm-hmm. And then those, there's some variety, but, you know, they, usually there it's 4 to 6, you know, 30 minute to an hour interviews plus a lunch. And, for the positions I was applying for, I was a little surprised. The interviews were 90 to 100% technical. There was very little, probably the least technical part of it was asking me to describe, or least sort of specific structured technical part was me explaining my thesis research. And the rest of it was very, you know, here's a scenario, here's a problem, here's a model, here's an equation, you know, code this thing. And so, you know, I guess there's a specific skill of doing these technical interviews, that they're quite similar to the cracking the coding interview type data structures and algorithms interviews, but more about statistics and machine learning and optimization for the positions I was interested in.
Is this something, and I think this topic is something our audience is very interested in, those of our audience that are in PhDs right now or applying to jobs right now, is preparation-wise, was there much preparation that you did do before your first interview of this style, and did it help very much?
So I probably could have done more preparation. So I guess I did, the first interview I did not prepare very much for, and then I didn't do so great on it. And then I realized that I should probably study up a little bit more for the remaining ones. I think it's, in general, it's hard to, there's such a wide variety of things they could ask you about. And the impression I got at most of the on-sites I did was that they're looking for you to really excel at the areas that you are good at, and then to be okay at the remaining things. I don't think they expect people to be an expert at every topic, because nobody is. I guess, you know, before the interviews that I was more serious about, I tried to think about what they would care about, you know, Google the people that I thought I might be likely to interview with, and from their backgrounds, guess what they might ask me about. I guess around that time, I went pretty deep into this book, Elements of Statistical Learning, which is a really great, like, theoretical statistical learning book. And I guess something that's become clear to me over time is, I think if you start diving deep into sort of the next level of a technical subject, it makes everything at the lower level of the pyramid become intuitive and easy. So, like, once you're learning real analysis and you know, very higher level math like that, something like calculus or linear algebra starts to become intuitive, and you can sort of connect the dots yourself on a concept. And so, you know, I thought diving deeper into statistical learning and things like that would be, you know, make it so that a more pedestrian machine learning question would be, you know, easier to wrap my head around, or at least directionally know what the right way to go with that is. So, I mean, whether that was the best strategy or not, I don't really know. I think there isn't really a book like Cracking the Coding Interview for data science interviews yet, and they all were kind of different. So, you know, probably the best preparation is a wide range of experiences, and then getting a good night's sleep before the interviews.
So besides prep beforehand, I think a lot of people have a suspicion that there's a very finite number of employers out there for jobs that they would be qualified for, and that if they do that first interview with Lyft, for example, or Amazon or Google, that once they bomb that first interview, that they won't be able to get a job at any of those places anymore. So I'm wondering if you can speak to our audience who have that fear about how that job market is not that finite, and that you should by all means interview for the jobs and prepare for them by all means, but also that there are many employers out there. Did you find that to be the case?
Well, I think it depends. So, like, I guess it depends how specific and targeted you are. So, I tend to sort of agree with that. For my own personal situation, I knew that I really wanted to be in a job where I felt like the specific area of expertise I have in terms of this discrete sequential stochastic decision making, I could see ways where I could directly apply that to those questions. And I felt like I did have a somewhat small group of companies that were sort of the first tier of what I'd want to target. And so in that sense, the stakes were kind of high in terms of, you know, but it wouldn't have been the end of the world, I guess, if it hadn't worked out. Like if you're willing to be flexible, there's a huge data science industry in San Francisco right now. And so, so I guess you do have to be strategic about, I suppose you'd want to think to yourself, you know, what is the niche that I'm most interested in? And then how specific is that? And how important is it to you to work in that specific area? And, maybe if it is very important, you know, it could be wise to think carefully about the order that you're applying to jobs in some way. I think it's probably not very ethical to apply to jobs you have no interest in, but you might not want to interview first at the job that is your number one priority. Maybe you'd want to interview at your number three priority first or something like that. Mm-hmm. Especially, I think, pretty much no matter what your circumstances, you know, doing 20 on-sites or something is a whole lot. So, you know, maybe doing more than 5 or 10 would be too much. And so you might want to think about knowing what you know of yourself, of your performance under stress, you know, what you think is the uncertainty in the job market. The right way to order that is kind of a good operations research problem. One to think about carefully.
Wow, a lot of stochasticity there. Well, Jeremy, this has been freaking awesome. I'm sure we'll have an opportunity to do this again a little ways down the road once you've had some time at Lyft. And while we might not be able to talk about the specifics of what you're working on once you start your new job, I hope we have another chance to talk soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Yeah.